Good afternoon and welcome to the podcast of the Loadseaters, the second sort of beta test rollout podcast. But we're gonna see how we do. I'm joined by Hugo Hilliday, is that?
Hilliday.
Yeah. Hilliday, yes. And we're going to be talking about things that have happened recently. Hugo, what do you want to start with?
We have a story of the UN. It's actually just come out, I think, yesterday, that the UN is reviewing the US. It's a periodic review. There's nothing too weird or anything like that. But it's reviewing the US for its human rights record. And what's particularly interesting about the story is which countries are actually in the Human Rights Commission of the UN. I mean, the story is reported by mainstream media, obviously, and it's kind of interesting the contrast between those countries and what they actually,
the people they're judging, I can already imagine the kind of coalition of villains that we're talking about casting judgment on the United States.
Yeah, exactly. Here. So it turns out that the Human Rights Council includes critics like Iran, Syria, Venezuela, Russia, and China.
It sounds like a Monty Python sketch or something, doesn't it?
Yeah. Well, the quote from the article is, these countries questioned and scrutinized the United States record on rights as the Human Rights Council gave the US its turn for a regular examination of the every UN member state's record on human rights, known as the Universal Periodic Review. And so this is a process that happens regularly. As I said, every 5 years a country is reviewed, and the US was being reviewed together with 13 other states, I think it was. So it's being pointed out in relation to the US especially, but it's not just them, it's just that the story is funny because of it. The other funny thing about it is what they actually have problems with, right? So there's one caveat to it, which is Syria, which is alleging occupation and war troubles, basically, which is kind of legit because the US has been in Syria and has done some questionable things in there, and so that's an outlier because all the others were criticizing the US for its domestic policies, right?
Right. Yeah.
For the response to George Floyd's death and things like that.
It seems fair to point out that the US was in Syria to defeat ISIS. Is that what they're referring to?
Yes, but it's also referring to it's also bringing up the questionable things the US did in Syria.
I mean, what examples did they give?
Well, basically funding the opposition to the government. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's the government representative that's speaking at the UN. So the US had funded the opposition in Syria, which
is this under the Obama administration?
Both. I mean, it started under Obama, and most things were happening under Obama.
It's the sort of continuation of the US international policy.
I mean, even if Trump really wanted to, he wouldn't have been able to do anything with it. I shouldn't say that.
I'm not trying to place blame. I'm just trying to understand the continuity of the process. Mm-hmm. We're talking about the United States as an institution rather than the actions of any one president.
Right. Yeah. Even though I say that Trump couldn't do much at the beginning, he could have certainly done stuff throughout this presidency. He's done some things about Syria, right?
The
situation is not the same as it was 4 years ago. But at the same time, he obviously could have done more, and the situation is still pretty dire, let's say, which is a shame. So the US defended itself by referring to the progresses made in Guantanamo. They cited reductions in people who are actually being held there, then the response to George Floyd's death being a legal process with the policeman, and then a general...
Just to be clear, hasn't Derek Chauvin been exonerated? Didn't he get let off?
I think he got let off, but... Yeah. I don't know the details about that one.
I don't know the details either. Yeah. I just saw the headlines going past. By the way, he's not being charged for this.
Yeah.
And, you know, there were, apparently in the autopsy, there are unusually high levels of fentanyl in his system. And things
yeah,
like
I heard about that as well.
Yeah.
But at the same time, the police in the US being exonerated doesn't exactly mean that they had not done nothing
that
wrong.
That does not. That's true. That is true. So, yeah.
Right. But yes,
we'll put a pin in that and come back to that in another podcast.
Yeah, that's probably a good idea.
Yeah.
Yes, and so the US representative also cited the rule of law and kind of the process being important, which is a good point to be brought up, but you would expect him to do that.
Yeah.
So
I imagine that China and Iran were just blushing as
well. Yeah, so the Chinese representative, sorry for not pronouncing the name. He rushed through apparently the 9 points of concern, which were some of which were systemic racism, politicization of COVID-19, proliferation of guns, and military interventions abroad. I've already mentioned that, but yeah. Wow. So those were the central themes.
Wow, that's quite staggering.
And then the Chinese representative also said, quote, "Stop interfering for political reasons in other countries." In other countries' internal affairs under the pretext of human rights, which is fair, but it's coming from China.
Yeah, I mean, I guess in the defense of China, they can say we don't put any pretext of human rights in place when we meddle in other countries.
But and so the comments that the authors of the article add are that China has often alleged that other countries unfairly poke into its domestic affairs with their concerns about the rights situation in Hong Kong, Tibet, and Western Xinjiang. So that's
it's so embarrassing.
I feel like it's an important context to mention this.
Should we ask the Tibetans how they feel about all of this?
Yeah. Right.
That is mad.
And so moving on, further down in the article, it's the ACLU gets asked about this. Mm-hmm. And
they don't side with China, do they?
No. I mean,
they might.
Not at the moment.
Not yet.
No.
Sorry, carry on.
Yep.
It's ridiculous. It's like the Saudis being on the UN Women's Council, isn't it?
Yeah,
It's tremendous. But sorry,
I mean,
Karen.
So it's we're making fun of it, but it's also important to mention that these processes in the UN are highly formalized, and it's not that the Western countries or the rich countries or powerful ones get to tell the others what to do and if they should or shouldn't go shouldn't be part of any committee or any human rights thing. But instead what they do is that they rotate, right? They apply and they get confirmed because that's the way it's done, and basically everyone's basically distrustful of each other within the UN because those are different states with different interests. Some of them are together, some of them not, and so it's held together by this this procedural kind of requirement. And so it's funny to see things like Saudi Arabia being on the women's rights panel, but at the same time, it's not unexpected. It's a fun sight, but it's not something to be kind of surprised at.
Yeah.
Right, and so back to the ACLU. The US had put out a report on its human rights record, and the ACLU said that the report is one of the worst attempts to cover up US human rights violations since the civil rights movement. And the ACLU director also said that, quote, "While the American voters elected a new president who is more committed to universal human rights, the international community must continue to hold the US accountable, blah, blah, blah." So the ACLU openly, or at least its director openly, supports Joe Biden, and they think Joe Biden is good on human rights. So
where would they get that impression?
Well, from the media?
I guess that's it, isn't it?
Might be. Well, Biden's actual record is includes supporting and or defending wars in Iraq, Syria, Serbia, and Libya. That's been fact-checked throughout, so feel free to check that.
I imagine that Biden voted for the Iraq war, didn't he?
He did, yeah. He later said it was a mistake, but he did. He didn't seem too remorseful, so... Biden's record also includes being anti-gay. There's an article by pinknews.co.uk which says that which says that after some older things that had happened, it seems that LGBT plus rights were barely a blip on his radar, on Biden's radar, until the 90s when Biden's voting record begins to look decidedly homophobic. and so there's a list of things that Biden then that voted for or against right. in relation to gay rights. It wasn't exactly flattering. He only flipped on gay marriage in 2012. But since then, he's been credited with a lot of like pro-LGBT sure. stuff. Fair enough. But there's still this history behind him. So
yeah.
It might say more about his nature, his kind of persona of a politician than his commitment to anything.
He's had a far greater number of years in office opposed to all of these things yep. than in favor, yep. is what you're saying. Yep. Yeah.
And so the last thing that I have here is him obviously being tough on crime. That's been a major theme throughout the election. So in 94, he led the charge to push through a crime bill, which increased a kind of these, how would I say it? Yeah, they call it Violent Crime Control and Law Enforcement Act, which indicates what it is. It was basically, it's been both attacked and defended by a lot of people, but it instituted a lot of tough on crime things, which were, in some cases, criticized by human rights assessors, let's say.
Yeah, and this is what they're all alleging is Biden's role in filling jails with young black right. men, isn't
yep.
it?
Yeah, exactly.
I can see the three strikes mandatory yep. life sentences for repeat offenders. Mm-hmm. You can yep. see how that puts a lot of people yep. in jail.
It was also big on drugs and locking people up yep. for drug offenses. So I would suggest that the director of the ACLU takes a second look into Biden's human rights record before endorsing him. That's all I'm saying. Right.
Well, I mean, I don't think he's likely to. I've found the narrative surrounding Biden, the attempt at painting Biden as some great unifier and some champion, like Martin Luther King-esque figure, has been really gross, actually.
In his speeches and in his like public appearances, he's been like that. He's been really like wholesome and unifying, right? But that's not like it's what he's doing now, and there's no real expectation that he'd do it in the future, or if you look in the past, like he's not really known for like doing that. Like that's his angle now, and that's fine, you know. Like, and in the future, what do I know? In the future, he might be that, and he might be like really unifying and really wholesome. I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah. But if you judge a man by his actions rather than his words, Biden seems to be a bit two-faced, corrupt, and somewhat of a liar, I would say. But like a corporate shill politician, like the sort of neoliberal establishment is generally how I characterize him, and I think that's fair.
Yeah, I mean, I think characterizing him as establishment is probably the most accurate. What can you do after spending like 25% of the whole US history in politics? Fact check me on that. It's not 25, it's something like that. It maybe is a bit less.
Yeah.
It's not exactly that.
But it's something like 47 years or something like that. Yeah. It's a really long
out of
time.
250.
So he has been there for quite some time. But sorry, what was the next thing you wanted to go on to?
So the Human Rights Council of the UN was criticized a month ago by The Guardian, which quoted a non-profit organization saying it's like arsonists joining the fire brigade, which it's justifiable. Yeah, that's.
I mean, the things like Cuba, Belarus, North Korea, Syria, Iran, and China, and other champions of human rights.
Exactly. That's what the UN Watch kind of reported. Let's say a month later, if you put that up. So a month later, these repressive regimes that were like arsonists joining the fire brigade were now among other champions of human rights. So that's fun.
I mean, that is.
Yeah.
I mean, it's hilarious, depressing.
Yeah. Well, and so the last picture that we have is is what China is asking the US to focus on, right, with respect to its human rights records. And so among those things, it's a bit small in the actual report, but you can find like his handle, that's fine. So eliminating systemic racism, racial discrimination, white supremacy, religious intolerance, and xenophobia. I mean, I'm sure some like those things exist in the US, but it's also China saying this. So,
I mean, where do you even start? Like,
just, a whole lot
it's
of
like
fun.
Hannibal Lecter telling you to be a pacifist and not hurt someone. Like, okay, Hannibal, but like, have you considered that I don't take lectures from murderers? Yeah. You know, on when it comes to hurting people, and much the same. Like, I just find this amazing. Like, white supremacy. I mean, how are they even defining that? I want the Chinese to define that for me. Because if they mean, you know, an ideology that's created by white people, then isn't the Communist Chinese Party white supremacist?
I don't think they mean that. I actually think they don't really mean anything with this.
Yeah, I
think this is a strategy to push back against the US and to make it more defensive within the UN and to make more of the other states in the UN to be basically angled against the US, right? Mm. And so it's just part of China's strategy to say something that will foment discord among Western states. Put China in a leading position.
Yeah, that's a very Machiavellian view of it.
And so it's understandable that they do it. It's just funny that this is the context which comes out of it, right?
It's the idea, man. The idea, but Well, on the plus side, at least it shows that the UN isn't really very useful and we shouldn't take moral guidance from it.
I mean, we probably shouldn't. There might be some good things that the UN can do and does, but stuff like this comes out of the UN pretty often, which looks kind of bizarre to a layman because most people don't really know exactly the UN does or how it works. So if they see something like this, this just looks ridiculous. So then what's the point?
Right. So, I mean, since we've been talking about Biden, we may as well go on to the election coverage that I wanted to cover.
All right.
And I thought we'd start with an article published yesterday by the Associated Press that I think puts all the numbers and the figures into context, because it's such a strange thing that has happened here. So at the moment, 148 million votes have been tallied. Joe Biden has won 75 million of those. Trump has received 70 million of those. And this is staggering because this is actually the highest for a losing candidate. And in fact, if Biden had not got 75 million, Trump would have had the most votes of any candidate in all of American history. You know, in 2008, Obama got 69 million. So the Trump campaign's desire to beat Obama, they have succeeded at. And in 2012, they only got 65 million. And so this leads us to a Judicial Watch survey that was conducted in September 2020 that revealed that 358 US counties had 1.8 million more registered voters than eligible voting age citizens. That really makes me wonder what happened there.
I mean, it makes you wonder. At the same time, the Judicial Watch is not exactly known for its reputation.
Well, I
want to just say that while it's not known for their reputation, the process that they took to here in arriving at those numbers doesn't really look wrong.
No.
It doesn't look suspicious or anything like that. So we might want to be careful in citing that source, but at the same time, with this, it looks more legit than perhaps not.
So the Judicial Watch is a Wikipedia calls it a conservative activist group, and on their own website they do list themselves as being conservative, but they also try to stress they want to be nonpartisan and merely investigate what they believe are instances of malpractice.
Yep.
It could just be that one side commits more of these instances of malpractice than the other. Or it could be that they're heavily biased and are not looking for the malpractice on their own side.
Yep.
So I think it is definitely worth pointing that out. But as you say, the methodology here seems to be fairly solid. I mean, they've put that, before we go through that, in Alaska, Colorado, Maine, Maryland, Michigan, New Jersey, Rhode Island, and Vermont, The study found that in these eight states, They had statewide registration rates exceeding 100%. The September 2020 study collected the most recent registration data posted online by the states themselves. The data was then compared to the Census Bureau's most recent five-year population estimates gathered by the American Community Survey from 2014 to 2018. So they're sent 3.5 million addresses each month, and its five-year estimates are considered to be the most reliable estimates outside of the decennial census, the 10-year census. And their study was limited to 37 states that post regular updates with their registration data. Certain state voter registration lists may even be even larger than reported because they excluded inactive voters from their data. Inactive voters may have moved elsewhere and their ballots may show up elsewhere. It looks like quite a good report from Judicial Watch.
Yeah. It looks thorough and done in good faith. It's something, I would say that it's something that you should not be obviously taking at face value, but it should be taken by other people who will do something similar again and again until like they find out whether something was done wrong or not.
It should be fact checked and confirmed by other organizations who, you know, may have their own partisan interests because we need to come to a shared reality, frankly. But the thing is, I think that in the very least, having one source saying that we've checked all this data, we've tabulated it all, and it seems that there have been 1.8 million more voters than there actually are, it seems to support Mitch McConnell giving his speech on the Senate floor saying, well, look, this, he didn't expressly say in his speech that he outright supports Trump having an investigation, legal investigation to this, but this is obviously what he is saying by taking the position that he takes.
Right.
He says, President Trump is 100% within his rights to look into allegations of irregularities and to weigh his legal options. He also chewed out the media for calling the elections for Biden, saying that the Constitution gives no role in this process to wealthy media corporations. You may remember the New York Times came out and said, oh, the media gets to call the elections. And I mean, that's just such a...
Then they took it back.
It was such a ridiculous statement. I mean, like, the media is not a codified institution. It's not something you can hold to account. I mean, we count as the media then, so we're calling it for Kanye West. So he then said, let's not have any lectures, no lectures about how the president should immediately cheerfully accept the preliminary results from the same characters who spent the last four years refusing to accept the validity of the last one. And that's totally fair. I mean, there was just non-stop, Russia stole the election, and now we've got to the narrative that actually the elections are inviolable, why are you even asking questions? Seems to be that there is more than enough evidence already to suggest, but then we go on to, did you want to say something first?
I just wanted to comment on the kind of calling states for certain candidates thing, because I've seen on Twitter, who was it, Mark Levin, he pointed out that this practice is kind of weird if you think about it from kind of afar, right? Not necessarily even like in this election, but overall.
Yeah.
And it's because the media can create kind of a perception that one candidate was never close to winning or had never had any chance to win, and so if on one side they call states for one candidate, but on the other they hesitate to call it for the other, it might seem like the one was always pretty much behind, and so the other was projected to win all the way through it, right? And so this is like, obviously we know what sides we're talking about in today's context, but that could apply to anything, right?
Yep.
And that perception can be skewed in any way that the media wants, and it's only going to depend on who they would prefer being the president and things like that.
And it seems to be an obvious, I guess we'll just say left-wing bias. At the moment, in the current context.
But the thing I
really find it interesting, because it's like, I mean, you open yourself to being dramatically wrong, which is embarrassing at the very least.
Yep.
And it's weird that you would want to open that Pandora's box. Mm-hmm. And it's not just one media organization. That's the weird thing. It's all of them, it seems, or almost all of them, and then a whole bunch of world leaders who see, I suppose, the press reports and, like, oh, well, we better send Biden a congratulations, even though this is not over by any stretch of the imagination.
Although the Slovenian prime minister, I think, he he called Trump
yeah.
On the night of the election, and he called to congratulate him for winning. Then he got embarrassed in front of everyone.
That might not age as badly as it sounds, because, like I said, it's still ongoing.
Fair enough. But so everyone laughed at him, basically.
Well, I'm sure the president of Mexico didn't congratulate Biden either.
Right.
For similar reasons, because it's like, well, hang on a second. And yesterday, I think it was, Bill Barr came out and made a statement, because McConnell had previously spoken to him. And afterwards, Bill Barr gives a statement that he authorizes the Department of Justice to investigate any, quote, substantial allegations of voter fraud in the 2020 election. He said they may be conducted if there are clear and apparently credible allegations of irregularities that, if true, could potentially impact the outcome of the federal election in an individual state. Well, the Judicial Watch investigation seems to suggest that, but there are also a bunch of these other ones. There was a video by one of the poll watchers. I actually can't remember what state this was in. But,
might be able to tell you.
Sorry?
Might be able to tell you.
Oh, okay, if you can, yeah.
Yeah, I've got the article that it's going to be up today.
Oh, okay, well, where was it?
No. I don't know what you mean yet.
Right.
Which one? There's been many.
Yeah, but there have been many. But in this particular video, the poll watcher, who names himself as a poll watcher when he's recording, goes downstairs into the basement area. But it's a really nice building, so state.
Oh, right. I know which one. It was like a cafe or something.
Yeah. It looks really nice, and she's just sat at a round table with stacks of ballots that she's counting. And the poll watcher comes up and asks them, "Well, why are you doing it down here? I'm a poll watcher. You should be doing it upstairs." Mm-hmm. And her and the woman across from her were both doing it, had no answers. Mm-hmm. They couldn't say, all they could say is, "Well, we're just volunteers." And then when asked who their supervisor was, they couldn't even name their supervisor. Mm-hmm. And the whole thing just looks incredibly suspicious.
Yeah.
And then you have the case of the Oregon elections director, who was abruptly fired after pointing out a series of serious issues with the state's aging and vulnerable technology for elections, say the Seattle Times. The election director was Stephen Trout, and he learned via a text message that he was fired after pointing out that the voting system they have was run on Windows Server 2008. Which is something that Microsoft no longer support or operate on. There is no multi-factor identification to protect it from hackers. This was described as the vulnerability, a massive vulnerability, obviously, running on software that is no longer even supported. I wouldn't even do that on my home laptop. And multi-factor identification is a no-brainer, which it obviously is.
Yes, yeah.
Using electronic software, like any kind of software to tabulate votes, I think is highly suspect.
Yeah.
Because anyone with a child could program an application that could just switch votes from one value from one variable to another. I mean, it would take no effort whatsoever. I personally am an advocate that we go back to shards of pottery.
I agree with you on that. And
I was joking about the shards of pottery, but physical ballots, I think, is useful.
The thing is that there's no reason to assume that most elections are reported accurately. I mean, you still need to trust the people who are actually like going through them and putting them on one side or the other, like, or doing something with them. And in any election, even if it's 100% on paper based, is probably going to have irregularities. And
totally.
And it's weird that so much is at stake, is being put at stake like society in general on these elections because of the way that
what's weird. I mean, I totally agree with you that any election you're going to expect mistakes made by humans, because humans are fallible creatures, but the problem is that I haven't found a single example of mistakes yet that favor Donald Trump. All of the mistakes consistently seem to be favoring Joe Biden. In the was it Michigan or Wisconsin, where the voting software glitched and 6,000 votes went to Biden, and the finding of dumped Trump ballots in like garbage and in the desert and things like this, and then Trump poll Republican poll watchers.
The desert thing was
that a fake one?
There was Iraq or something like that.
Right. Okay. Yeah. But the other ones were legitimate, as I understand it.
I don't know enough about those. I can't confirm.
Well, they appeared to be, yep, from what I saw. There was a video going around of a guy at his wedding who'd found a bunch of... In the day before, they had done polling in the building, mm-hmm, and he'd found a bunch of ballots in the bin at his wedding that were mostly for Trump. They did find one Biden ballot there.
So actually, I haven't seen that, actually.
I'll show you afterwards. But the irony being that there was one Biden ballot in there, so it is proof that there is human error involved in everything.
No, but I mean, if I should be like a devil's advocate or something, I'd say that you have all these things being reported as like glitches and mistakes and things like that, irregularities in Biden's favor. Mm-hmm. That might be because only the Republicans are looking for these, right? So if you're a Republican and you're looking for voter fraud and you find something that favors Biden, you're going to throw it out. So, I mean,
but it's just weird. The assumption is never that the Republicans are committing fraud, isn't it?
It's not. But the assumption on the left is that people who are alleging it are crazy. So
that's weird, isn't it? Because that just seems to be like the
that seems to be more than enough evidence to warrant an investigation.
Absolutely, so. there seems to be more than enough evidence. And like I said, I'm not saying like never investigate the Republicans. It's just I haven't found a single example where it might be that a Republican has shifted votes. I mean, you've got to be cynical about these things. You've got to ask yourself why it's always on one side. To the, you know, for the most popular candidate in history to have, you know, maybe 1.8 million voters more, and you know, this all seems to be shifting in the same direction. And then you get like the Nevada Registrar of Voters, a guy called Joe Gloria, who's received a bunch of allegations of voter fraud, but has refused to investigate them until after the election. Why? I mean, it seems really pertinent that you would have to investigate them before, because how are you going to determine the election unless you know you're counting valid votes? But, I mean, he just says that the votes are in the system at this point, so we'll just have to wait till after the election, post-election, to go after anything that's been reported at this time.
But
that's not how it works.
But maybe what he's saying is that... If you have the votes, they are already counted, and you like put them together. Mm-hmm. You can't tell which ones were put there legitimately and which ones haven't, right? And so what he might be saying is that the process through which this was done needs to be investigated, but we can't do anything about the votes that have already been cast. And that's a fair point. And
maybe, but that doesn't seem to be what he's saying.
I don't know, but if there was what he was saying, he could be. He could be basically saying not that we're going to forget about it this election, mm-hmm, but like we need to like wrap up the process, and then like if we go through the stuff that's supposed to be irregular, mm-hmm, and we find that all of it was done wrong, we're going to call another election or something like that, right? And that can happen. I don't think that's what he's saying, but I think that's how you could interpret it, so that it's like fair towards him, but it still ends up with Trump having a recount or a new election or something like that.
I think that would be a very generous interpretation of what he's saying there. It strikes me as very, very strange. The Nevada GOP has announced that they found 3,062 instances of voter fraud,
yep,
and they expect that number to grow, but this is just what they've investigated so far. And then, I mean... I don't know. Just to say, well, we'll do the investigation after the election implies that the result is going to be accepted, finalized, and then the electors will vote on the president, presumably for Biden, if Biden's electors are chosen. So the idea of doing the recount or the investigation afterwards, I mean, what... The horse is bolted.
I agree that that's what it looks like, but at the same time, the stronger the more charitable you make the interpretation, the stronger you make your case. So.
I suppose that's true, unless it... really looks obvious that, you know, that you're not necessarily connecting with what's really happening on the ground, I guess. But I mean, I could just be uncharitable. It's just, again, there are just so many examples of these things going on that I...
I actually wanted to say another thing about your... what you said about the software.
Yeah.
There was an article in January, I think, this year, but it was like it was 9 months or 10 months before the elections. So it was by Bloomberg, and they said that many states across America are using outdated software and hardware as well, which is connected to the internet, right?
Yes.
And a lot of like security experts and people like that have said that this is a major security risk, and you can basically do a lot of shady stuff with it.
Yeah.
And that's illegal as well.
Oh, it's illegal as well, is it?
Yeah, I can't confirm it, but that's what I read.
Yeah, right. Okay. I mean, they
fact check us.
Yeah, I don't think they say that in the Bloomberg article, but that could be true. But it's interesting that Bloomberg talks about this in January, because it's not in real context of the election. So it's not something that's politicized just because of how the election turned out.
Yeah.
So far,
interestingly, in the Seattle Times article, they do point out that in 2018, the then Secretary of State Dennis Richardson had earmarked $100,000 in federal funds to install a multi-factor authentication system for their elections. But Clarno, which is the current Secretary of State, was appointed by Brown to replace him, and it just never happened. So it's again, yeah, like they understand that there are vulnerabilities in the system. It's just for presumably institutional torpor, you know, that these things didn't get done.
I think it's significant that in what Bloomberg reported, that happens across many states in the U.S. Because if we find some like one thing like this happening in one U.S. state, that can be kind of excused, I guess. Fairly reasonably by saying it's 50 states, every state is doing something differently, and so there's going to be something that's like weird with each one, because it's a mess, right? It's bureaucracy, it's something that takes a long time, it takes a long time to upgrade, you know, the technology is ancient, so you'll have these things come out which will be funny and interesting, but if it just happens in like one state and doesn't happen across, that can be like, okay, what are you gonna do? That's how bureaucracy works, right?
Yeah.
But if it's a running theme across many states, then that's a different issue, obviously.
Right. And the final thing I think is worth talking about is the left wing reaction to all of this. Can we get up the Lee Camp tweets, please? Thanks. This is one of those. Just one of those scenarios where you just think, well, you get what you deserve, don't you? I can't imagine that Lee Camp has really made any positive comment on Donald Trump throughout his entire candidacy.
Who actually is he?
So Lee Camp is a left-wing comedian. I used to be quite a big fan of Lee Camp, actually, go back about 5-10 years. Because he used to talk about, you know, corporate malfeasance and all this sort of stuff. And he was funny and it was true. And him tweeting out this, I've heard literally no one talk about this. I promise that in his first week on the job, Joe Biden will sign back into the Trans-Pacific Partnership trade deal, now renamed, widely considered the largest corporate power grab ever conceived. Yeah, and it was Trump that killed that. And it's one of those things like, right, okay, so you probably were in active opposition to Donald Trump right up until the results of the election appear to have come in. And now you're like, well, hang on a second. Like, nervous sweating intensifies. Because this is not good. And this is the general understanding. I think the left really, they knew that Joe Biden wasn't their guy. I mean, he's really not.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And, you know, they knew that he's part of the corrupt democratic power establishment that has, you know, had its own, like, the way they're championing George W. Bush now shows that there's obviously
John McCain.
And John McCain. Oh, God, yeah, and John McCain.
Just see the picture.
Yeah, right.
I forgot to send it to John, but it's amazing. There's Biden hugging Kamala Harris, and they're like looking like merrily at each other, and then above them in the clouds are like faces of like some of Ruth Bader Ginsburg, right? That's one, and then two other people, and then John McCain, you know, and people are commenting on it on Twitter, like, I'm so happy, you know, I'm the happiest day of my life.
So yeah, it's oh god, it's gross, but let's just that you can see that there is this kind of neoliberal establishment that had transcended both parties that has been supplanted by Donald Trump and his agenda. His agenda is very much not the same agenda as theirs. Trump being a peacemaker in the Middle East, not starting foreign wars, taking an interest in working class concerns in the United States. These are all very... He's got a completely different way of running the country, and one that I think actually works a lot better. But what's interesting is the fact that Biden and the rest of the neoliberal establishment don't seem to have known what to do with the sort of rabid leftists, the Bolsheviks in their own ranks, and have played a lot of defense for them. Now, I appreciate that you don't feel quite as strongly, but I think that you get what you deserve here. So the first example is at the debate, where Trump obviously was forced to denounce white supremacy again, even though the white supremacists voted for Joe Biden. Rich Spencer is a proud Biden voter. And when asked about Antifa, Joe Biden was just like, it was just an idea, which is amazing that you can say that, considering that in New Jersey, they're counted as a terrorist organization, and there's federal investigations going into them at the moment. And you've got Kamala Harris posting the Minnesota Freedom Fund, which is helping to bail out the, quote, protesters, which means Antifa rioters, revolutionaries. And this bail fund was used to get an accused child molester and a woman who stabbed her own mother out of custody. I mean, just they're sending their best.
Yeah.
Again, like with Kyle Rittenhouse, like you fire into a crowd of Antifa and you shoot a woman beater and a pedophile. What are the odds? Just like, what are the odds?
Yeah, fair enough. I mean, I definitely agree with you in that, like, if Trump is made to apologize and denounce many other people which he doesn't support, then Biden should do the same, or should be expected to do the same. I mean, it's a why should the standard be different, right?
Why should Trump be forced to denounce Joe Biden's supporters? I'm not wrong.
Yeah, you're not wrong.
It's not wrong.
At the same time, Biden has been really effective in like basically killing the far left within the Democratic Party. I mean, and maybe it was not Biden. Maybe it was the Democratic Party itself.
Yes, being they
got rid of Bernie, and in the primaries, it was suspicious. Let's say the process through which Biden actually got the nomination, and so the
process with Hillary as well. In fact, I could actually believe that Bernie in 2019 legitimately lost the internal primaries. It looked like he did. Mm-hmm. You know, it looked like the votes were just there for Biden.
Or like February or something.
Well, in a minute. Give me, great.
Yep.
In the 2019 primaries, I can totally believe that Biden won it because he did seem to have the most votes. And I think it's the same sort of effect that was happening over here with Corbyn and Keir Starmer, is that there's about two-thirds of the party that is not radical leftist, but don't really have any good arguments against the radical leftists. And so essentially, they just clumped together and voted for their milquetoast, middle-of-the-road, centre-left candidate to exile the Corbyns and the Bernies, which is a natural internal defensive reaction for this party.
If you go on Twitter right now, you have left-wingers or far-left-wingers, everyone, saying that Joe Biden is a Republican.
Well, from their perspective, he is, essentially. You know.
But it's he's basically I don't know who said that. Maybe it was Michael Malice who Biden has been more effective in fighting against the radical left than Donald Trump, which is it's an interesting point. No, it would be fun to compare what the two have done.
Yeah. I mean, they're certainly close to him. But anyway, the thing that annoys me is the defense and the cover that the Democratic establishment has played. Like, there's Congressman Jerry Nadler, who called Antifa a myth to Fleckus Talks.
Yep.
There was Ted Cruz addressing Maisie Hirono. And so, you know, you're welcome to say something negative about Antifa right now. And she declines to speak and just walks off.
Yep.
And so,
No, and it hasn't. It hasn't been just these examples. It's it's been across the board.
Yeah.
Especially in the media and in the more left leaning media and in the US, it's been like denial of Antifa's existence. But not only that. Like there's two sides of it, because if it's more the more Emily strategy. It's basically when they're on the offensive, they can classify and they can. They obviously say that Antifa exists. So they say it's like a freedom-fighting organization against fascism, against things like that, right? And so that's their opinion of them when they're on the offensive. Mm-hmm. When someone calls them out on it, they retreat, say that no, it's not an organization. It's disorganized. Not disorganized, it's like distributed, right?
Mm-hmm. Decentralized.
And decentralized, so that means that it doesn't exist. Yeah. I mean that's false. I mean the Antifa themselves, they would say that the fact that they work like that they are not a corporation with a president on top, mm-hmm. but like many.
Well, they act like ISIS cells. They've got an ideology and they can self-organize.
Yeah, it's many local organizations that then talk to each other and organize things together, right? It's like fair enough, and so that they would be proud of it, because that makes the case for them that organization don't have to be ruled in the capitalist way, right? Yeah. With the president on top in like a corporation,
or
something like that. So they'd be proud of that, right?
ISIS proud anti-capitalist.
Exactly. Yeah. So they would say we're the evidence with the proof that organizations like this can exist and don't have to be capitalistic. Right?
Yeah.
And so if you have someone saying that they don't exist because of this, it's just a marketing strategy.
The thing you can always do is send them CNN's insider documentary about Antifa. CNN, Vice News, I'm pretty sure Vox has done one as well, where they embed a journalist with like Rose City Antifa or Portland Antifa or Boston Antifa or wherever it was. And they go around explaining, you know, why we do this. But, you know, like there was a Vice documentary where they were complaining about patriarchy within Antifa's own organization, because the men were practicing throwing the Molotov cocktails that the women were making. And it's like, right. So, I mean, that does imply that patriarchy is undefeatable. If even the communists, who are expressly avowed anti-patriarchs, can't stamp it out, I think we're just... You know, just accept that exists.
That reminds me of May this year, when Chaz was established in Seattle, it was basically established. They said now it exists. 6 hours later, someone was accused of sexual misconduct.
it's not
anything obviously like against them as a whole. Like this
I
point,
think it should be. I think it should be.
It's just funny that these things happen, and it's funny to point that out.
But it seems that Black Lives Matter and Antifa are turning on the Biden campaign, since this was nothing to do. You know, they were just using the Democrats as a convenient way of advancing their agenda. So it makes sense that the Democrats have been essentially purging them, and more power to them, obviously. But there was a video that I wish we'd got up, but we didn't, of a Biden voter in his house versus a Black Lives Matter protest. Now, I'm actually not sure where this is, but if you can see the video, I'll try and put it in the link in the description or something. The old white man who owns the house comes out and says, "There's my Biden sign. Don't destroy anything. Be peaceful." To which the mob of Black Lives Matter, mostly black supporters, say, "No one cares about your white ass opinion. Who do you think you are telling black people how to protest, you effing white ass privileged old man? You ask for a peaceful protest, it's white supremacy. Asking for people to be peaceful is white supremacy." What do you make of that?
No, I mean...
it's not my opinion on it.
I know.
I think non-white people can be peaceful.
I mean,
don't know what to tell you. Black Lives Matter.
Yeah, I'm not racist.
yeah, yeah, yeah,
No, but I mean, like this is not like about like white people saying something about black people, right? This is like some activists like trashing some other guys. So it's funny that this is the standard, right? You can't expect us to be peaceful. Like I've
got the video clip. Do you want to play it?
Let's finish this segment and then.
I think that should be. Like anywhere in any context, that should be kind of the standard. Like you expect other people not to be violent. So making it sound like not being violent is white supremacy is murky.
If you can play it, go for it. Right. Have you got a headphone over there?
Oh yeah, it's up there.
Yeah, sorry. We should have got this ready. I wasn't really prepared for it.
It's a test podcast.
It is a test podcast.
You told me before and I would have grabbed it beforehand too.
Yeah, I didn't think. God, what's this stuck on?
Right. Can I help?
Maybe. Right. Let's see. There's the thing. So I'm not sure how much you've got there. Have you got enough?
Yeah.
Great. Okay. Like I said, we should have properly planned this. Never mind. So basically, just clip it to the back of your jumper or whatever. It should sit in your ear, okay? All right. Do you want to give it a go, John? I can't hear anything.
It's muted on the screen.
Yep. Okay, so, I mean, generally that's, I don't think, a winning strategy, telling people that peacefulness is white supremacy. It seems to be a way of enabling white supremacists. It seems to be a way of giving them the moral high ground and in validating everything that they've been saying about white people, which I don't think is true. So maybe we need to disavow that, I think firm disavowal.
Yep, yep.
Peace is not an aspect of white supremacy.
Nope.
Unique one.
No.
But that's it got worse though. It got worse than that because that's just an angry Black Lives Matter race warrior protest. Antifa went to Multnomah County and the Democrats building in Northeast Portland during a planned No President's riot and smashed the place up. I don't know whether we can get the images of the Black Lives Matter ones up. Yeah, so not looking good for the Portland Democrats.
I think they might have chosen the wrong strategy overall.
Why do you say that?
Not them, Portland Democrats.
Oh, I mean, yeah, absolutely.
I feel like that happens quite a lot, that you have a party that's not in and of itself radical, but that you know, embraces...
Allows the radical elements to come in. Yeah,
exactly. It kind of... embrace that part, or at least allow them to kind of speak for them on some level, and also like contribute to what they do, right? And so if they do that, then might find themselves in this position later, which means basically like you are the enemy as well. I mean has been a couple of years ago since we've seen liberals get the bullet too. So
that was still just as valid now as it was then. They still mean it, and this is
I'm not surprised actually. Like this was pretty.
Oh, I'm not surprised by this at all. This is we've been we in this sort of space have been predicting this. Like they're gonna ice pick you in the back. You're not gonna get out of this alive. Fuck Biden, no presidents.
But like maybe we're being like not, maybe we're not being charitable to the Democrats. Maybe they predicted this as well, and this is like, and this is collateral damage. And then it all turned out the way they wanted, and now like, and that was the plan all along. Like,
I guess I think that would be the uncharitable way of looking at it, but I think it's more charitable to suggest that they are the sort of you know, the sort of conservatives who embraced the Nazis and then got consumed by them.
Right, you know,
they thought that they could control the monster that they're riding on the back of, and it turns out they can't.
I agree that that's this kind of this analogy offers itself.
It does. It's exactly what happened. And the thing is, this is why I think the Republicans have not had this problem with the white supremacists, because they just explicitly kick them out of their party.
They've been really careful in denouncing everyone. Yeah. Like if you find. I don't want to be too categorical with this, but mostly it turns out that if you find questionable like racial or something like that stuff in the past of like some politician in the U.S., it's probably going to be something in relation to the Democratic Party and not the Republican Party.
Yeah.
But not that doesn't mean that the Democratic Party is more racist or anything like that. It just means that they because of the way that they're perceived, they can allow themselves to be less careful about that type of stuff.
Yeah.
And, but like this is also a thing that we can view as like where it can lead to, right?
Oh, absolutely. Well, the same sort of thing would have happened to the Republicans had they let the white supremacists in.
Definitely.
You'd find that you know, black Republicans would be harassed by the white supremacists saying, "Get out of our party, go back to the Democrats," or something like that. You know, and it is internally to their credit that they didn't allow people like Richard Spencer and Nick Fuentes to join. You know, it's not appropriate.
Yeah.
And I think the Republicans have got to keep down this line, because otherwise, this future where you've got all of these smashed windows and it'll be FN words that will come up rather than F Biden. But the principle is the same. You've got this radical, violent fringe in your party who just don't care about your moral values. They've got their own. And like you said, see you as the enemy. And there's a part of me that is quite happy with this, really, because at least this is now the own internal problem of the Democrats. It's not the problem of the candidate I support now. You know, no one's pointing to Trump and going, "You caused this Antifa." Come on. No one thinks that Antifa or Black Lives Matter is Trump's fault, because they're not.
You said that the Republican Party didn't allow Richard Spencer to join. Did he? Had he applied?
He tried to go to the Republican National Convention in I think it was 2016 or 2017. I can't remember which one it was, and he was just thrown out.
I thought he was a Democrat.
Well, I mean, he is now. He votes Biden, at least, you know. So he must be thrown.
I thought he was like, "Yeah, I'm in line with the Democratic Party, but not."
He called himself a progressive, and he came out in favor of Biden.
Right. Yeah.
So
yeah.
I mean, I don't know whether they will allow.
He's not affiliated with them. He's not.
Not probably officially.
Yeah.
But I think he certainly did vote for them. Yeah. Like, I mean, he posted.
I've seen that, but I wouldn't want to like be saying, like, telling someone that he's affiliated with them when he's not. Like, he might have voted for them.
I wouldn't.
That's the extent of it so far.
I don't think they're claiming him as a representative. He's just a CNN analyst at the moment. But I mean, you've got to understand, it's a ladder you've got to climb, right? To get in on the inside, you've got to start working in with the media and then supporting the candidates, and eventually, you know, he'll be the lead runner. It'll be like anti-racist Hitler or something, you know.
Maybe he'll turn and confess his sins, just as Biden had done, you know, with his LGBT stuff.
Entirely possible.
So.
And the thing is, I mean, in many ways, Richard Spencer very much is a progressive. I mean, he agrees with the framework that they've laid out about like whiteness and white supremacy. He's just in favor of it rather than against it, you know. And that's fine.
I mean, the old right are mostly progressives too. So
yeah, well, they can, you know, they're sort of Zoomer or early millennial aged kids who have that kind of opinion.
Yeah.
You know, they grew up in that milieu.
There's just one other comment I wanted to make in relation to like the smashed Democratic thing stuff.
Yeah,
like you've got Antifa saying ACAB and stuff like that, and like, "Not my president," right? I mean, I can sympathize a bit with that sentiment as well, because like, I mean, it's not like the presidents historically like haven't been awful, like most of them or all of them. And like if you're really against Trump, you can say the same thing against Trump. Like you can say Trump's been a bit better or a bit worse than others, right? But we can still say that if you have a problem with some of the like systemic stuff that the U.S. government like does abroad or something like that, or even home, then Trump kind of like fits into that pattern as well. Like he's not out there.
Yeah.
He's not out of the line.
Yeah. Okay.
And Biden is not going to be either. So.
No. Biden.
So the sentiment is substantiated.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, it's. I won't make a joke I was going to make, actually. I don't want to get in trouble. Right, so we've got an audio comment from Rick Vromans, is that? John?
Hang on a second.
What's up,
Sargon and Hugo? I was just wondering how great you think the chance is that Trump actually still wins the election.
Ooh. How great do you think the chances are of Trump winning the election?
Well, actually, we saw earlier today that maybe it was yesterday evening that Pennsylvania was switched on Real Clear Politics. It was switched from Biden's color to neutral.
Yeah.
It's gray now. And so the states open now are Arizona, North Carolina, Georgia, and Pennsylvania officially open.
Nevada as well. I think CNN unflipped Nevada.
Right. Not on Real Clear Politics. That's what I'm going off of. So these four, and if he wins those four, if Trump wins those four, he wins the election, right?
Yeah.
And if he loses one, he doesn't. But in all of these states, things are already in motion for either the votes to be recounted, or something else, or like investigation of what was going on, investigation into these glitches that seem to add a few thousand votes here and there, right? And so it can add up. I mean, I just read an article earlier today. I can't remember the source that said that in Wisconsin another glitch, quite large actually, like large number of thousands, you know, less than 10,000, I think, but a large number of votes was discovered to be in Biden's folder instead of the Trump folder.
What another coincidence!
Like
just always in the same direction.
But if that is acknowledged officially and like recounted, then you'll have the Biden lead at about 1,500 votes, something like that. So another one, and you get it flipped. And if Wisconsin is flipped, then Trump doesn't even have to win Arizona or Georgia, I think. No, that wouldn't work. But Arizona would.
Oh, yeah. Georgia's having a recount as well.
So yeah, it is. It was actually the first one to announce because it was too the margin was too thin.
Yeah. And so this is the thing, though, isn't it? Like 1,000 votes in a state could easily flip it. Mm-hmm. The margins are genuinely razor thin. Yep. And so, yeah, I mean, I don't think that this is over at all.
No, it's not over.
Yep. You know, and Bill Barr authorizing, do the investigations. Let's see where this goes. Who knows what's going to happen?
Yep.
You know, it's knife edge stuff. Season two of America is really thrilling.
Yeah. It's kind of funny to follow that because like it's obviously not over. It's obviously going to be drawn out for a couple of days at least, weeks probably. And a lot of people are celebrating, which is kind of pretty much it, I think. So I'm
fingers crossed that this all goes badly.
I'm really looking forward to the reaction. If it flips, and then maybe it flips again. So reactions to that.
Maybe there's an audit of the votes, and it turns out that many of these votes were actually mail. You know, the mail-in votes are suspicious, and maybe the numbers changed dramatically after the investigations. We don't know. Yep. And
at the same time, there's this one thing that we talked about earlier, right? Where I said that that you would expect most of the election fraud uncovered to be done in the favor of the Democrats when it's the Republicans uncovering it.
Yep.
But if it's something official, right? If it's something like DOJ or something like that, you have a larger chance of like anything being uncovered, right? So you might have, you know, it'd be funny if you had like massive voter fraud on the side of the Democrats, but like slightly less or equally massive voter fraud on the side of the Republicans. I don't think that would happen because people would prevent it coming out, right? But
the media would the media would report on the Republican stuff. They'd be all over it. And that's the thing. If any of this was going the other way, if it was, you know, Donald Trump appears to have got all of these mysterious ballots that turned up at 5 a.m., 100,000 just for Donald Trump, the media would never let this go. This would, yeah. I mean, this would be...
Not obviously.
Like, if they had nothing for the Russian interference, and they didn't let that go for four years, if they had just, you know, a tenth of the evidence of interference that appears to exist for this one, it'd be all we'd hear, blah, 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 Donald Trump's illegitimate, Donald Trump's illegitimate.
Yeah.
So, no, so yeah.
Yeah, it's clear, like, when it comes to the media, like, it's clear what's going on. That's not, like, when it comes to the election, things are in dispute. When it comes to the media, they aren't.
Well, yeah, but that's it. And that's openly gaslighting people.
Yeah.
You know, they've taken it upon themselves to misinform the public. And when that suddenly flips, I mean, A, the public impression will be something like, well, Donald Trump must have done something illegal, presumably, or, you know, suspicious, which it doesn't look like he has, actually, remarkably. And the fact that, you know, the narrative that, oh, Joe Biden got cheated, he was the most popular, it's like, oh, come on. But anyway, thank you everyone for joining us. This has been a great chat. This has been myself and Hugo. And if you would like to see more exclusive content, you can go and become a member of lotuseaters.com. We've got, what have you been writing about today, by the way?
Actually, I've been compiling the article about the elections, which is basically going to be just an overview of what has happened yet. It goes through all the kind of alleged election discrepancies, and it's obviously it's not saying that's conclusive because nothing is, but it's saying that Trump is justified basically in launching an investigation.
Right, okay, and is that up now or will that be up later?
It's going to be up in about an hour.
Right, so go check lotuseaters.com in about an hour. Well, check now actually, but checking it in an hour for Hugo's article.
And there's more stuff to read, so you can check it now.
There's loads to read, and we've got some good exclusive content, and this will be useful stuff. So thanks for joining us, and we'll see you at 1 p.m. British time tomorrow. See you later, everyone.